All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try this.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
This is our little intro.
Yep.
We basically have the setup, but we don't have the punchline.
Right.
So we're just going to set you up, and you're going to come up with one on the fly, all right?
yeah, sure.
You're going to do it. All right, we're going to count on you for this. Ready?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Who's going first?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Then you set up Dan.
Okay.
Okay, ready? Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
how your tweets can help make a set list.
Unless you're too dumb to tweet.
I thought you were going to play off the passing fad.
Yeah. Yeah, let's try that
let's
again.
Let's try it again. Okay. We're workshopping it.
We're keeping that one, though. That was good. Well, we can use that for next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't ready.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
how your tweets can help make a set list.
Isn't Twitter just one of those passing fads, though?
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner. All right. Breeze is quite nice.
Ah, it is nice out here on the deck, Jim, with that little breeze. Not too humid today.
No, it's not.
Hot.
It's hot, but not humid. So as long as you're out of the sun, which we are with this new umbrella that I just got.
Yes.
You're fine. But we're also, because of the position of the sun, we're all like on one half of the table.
That's right. Although the shade is advancing. So
close quarters. Maximum capacity, I would say, for the deck under these conditions.
That's right.
Eventually, I'm going to get a new larger table which will make recording out here even better. And you're going to be grilling for us.
That's right.
Right, as we're recording.
And we'll be doing that.
Yes.
And we
just
are
wear a wireless mic while you're over there.
That's right.
Give us a demonstration.
DJ.
Right?
Yeah. And we're at maximum capacity because our good friend Dan Gursky is here.
Hey,
Dan. Right.
Hey, happy to be here.
Thanks
An
for coming.
Honor to be invited back.
Thank you for coming.
We love Dan. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And this is Rockin' the Suburbs, and Dan is a suburban height.
A DC-ite, actually, but
that's
a
right.
Former longtime suburbanite.
That's right.
He went the other direction, back to the city.
That's right. You
right.
came.
And Dan was kind enough to bring some beer here.
He did.
Is nice.
What
yeah.
is that?
Yeah, so this is, it's from, what is the name of the brewing company? Union.
Yep.
Union Craft Brewing out of Baltimore.
Right.
So I was in New York State last week and tried a sour beer, which I really have not had a lot of fondness for in the past, but it was a cranberry sour beer.
Oh.
And I tried it, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. So I thought, today it's rather summery, as you guys mentioned.
Yep.
So I picked up a six-pack of this. And as I was buying it, the guy said, this is good beer. It's not very strong. You can drink a lot of them. So I thought, man, is that a perfect beer for you guys.
That's a lawnmower
so,
beer, yeah.
It's sort of salty, sort of citrusy, sort of spicy. So I'm quite enjoying it. So Patrick, why don't you give it a try?
I'm about to do it. Yeah, that's got some salt and tang to it for sure, man.
I did read something. I was trying to. Goza is how you pronounce it. And I found online someone compared it to drinking either warm sweat or cold sweat, depending on the temperature of the beer. But I think that's a slanderous.
This is cool. The beer snobs will probably disagree with me on this, but I like it when it's not like super high in
alcohol.
In ABV.
Yeah.
Right? Because, then you can enjoy more of them.
Right.
All right. Now, you recently went to a show and you had a interesting experience around this show. I find this to be fascinating, you know, in terms of like how musicians find new ways to entertain people in this modern world. So tell us about this.
Yeah. So Robin Hitchcock played at a venue that Patrick and Jim know well called Jam and Java here in Northern Virginia just a few weeks ago, and a small place. What do you figure it holds? 200-300 maybe? And he did two sets. So before a couple days before the show, both on Facebook and Twitter, he posted a solicitation for requests, and got quite a few responses. He'd say which show are you going to be to, what do you want to go into, which what do you want to hear, and then on Twitter, with the shorter number of characters, he was like, "What do you want to hear? I'm not going to repeat any pieces for the two sets," which I thought was pretty impressive. And it generated a whole lot of requests. And in fact, at the show, I would say that probably half, maybe more than half of the pieces he played were requests. Now, who knows if it would have been the same show just because those are popular yeah. songs. But the man has a massive catalog. Right. So, and I calculated there was 48 pieces over the 2 days, no repeats.
Wow.
And then, so there's that part of things. I don't know if you want to talk about the part where it gets a little bit weird, or you want to discuss that that part first. Which
I like weird, but let's save weird. Keep yeah. the listeners hanging.
That's right.
Weird.
Yeah. So that's just that was just sort of interesting. That was the first show where I had seen so many requests. It's not just the who's going on Facebook. You know, you see the event requests. Yeah. You know, those, you know, check in at this right. show and that kind of thing.
So artists have taken requests in different ways over the years. I mean, the most obvious would just be people shouting it out, right?
Yeah,
and I've seen
right.
shows like that. In fact, the last show I saw at Jam and Java was Corey Brannan, and mm-hmm. he did that at one point. He's like, what do you guys want to hear? And people just yelled stuff out, and he was like, okay, I'll play that. So there's that. In a small club like that, that works.
Yeah.
Then in like a big venue, I've seen the Springseed method, which is that people bring the signs that they yeah. hold up, and that's become a whole thing at the show now, this whole phenomenon.
Right.
And it's incredibly cool because he points to somebody holding a sign, and then people pass it up, and then he shows it to the band.
Yeah.
And they play that song, right?
Cool, yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. it feels like it's spontaneous. I think it is. What you're describing here is just, you know, fully embracing the means of communication that happen now between yeah. artists and fans, right? And using that, incorporating that into the show. It's just amazing to me.
It's very cool. I just had this image of, you know, at conferences sometimes when they run like a live Twitter yeah. feed, it could be like back yeah. on the screen, you know, like play this.
Back
now.
Channel. Yeah, that's very cool.
But it's a little more civilized than people, you know, one drunk guy in the back yelling out the same song for like, you know, the oh. entire show, right?
That's the worst. And I'll just tell you real quickly, you know, we just came off of the episodes with the Tommy Stinson interview. And when I was at that Bash and Pop show, there was one guy who continued to yell for a song. And what was the song? Fast and Hard.
Okay.
Which is a song from the 90s Bash and Pop album. And if you look at the set lists of what they've been playing, they tended to open with that song. They didn't at this particular show. The guy's yelling for it. And I'm thinking to myself, you are doing this to the wrong performer. As soon as he hears you keep yelling that, he is not going to play it.
No, that exactly is just right.
There is no way that's happening.
This is the man who colluded to sabotage several major label executives when they came to see the shows by like
that's right.
playing in dresses and playing none of their own songs.
That's
and
right.
Switching instruments.
It yeah. is in his DNA, you know, to right. not, you know, satisfy right. what people want. And then the other thing I remember years and years ago, I was at an Elvis Costello show mm-hmm. in the early 90s where he was big enough then to play at like amphitheaters.
Yes.
I guess maybe he still does, but I think he's more of like a theater act now.
Yeah.
But anyway, imagine a big outdoor amphitheater yeah. and we're sort of like in the back of the pavilion before the lawn starts, like the back of the seated uh-huh. area, so far from the stage that nobody on stage is going to hear what you're yelling.
No.
And some guy by us just keeps yelling all the time, pump it up, pump it up. And I'm just like, shut up.
Now, didn't Elvis once tour with a big wheel that was kind of like the Wheel
yes.
of Fortune where he yes. spun it and
I saw
played
that.
Songs?
Yeah. I saw that show. I think he would pull people out of the audience.
To spin.
And he had like the Carnival Barker hat thing on and they would spin it. It had about 20, 30 songs on it. They'd spin it and then he'd pull it out. It might be a song. It might be songs about girls
right.
or like thematic oh, yeah. stuff. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool.
That was a cool idea.
Yeah.
So you took advantage of this Twitter request thing,
yes.
right?
So
with Robin Hitchcock.
I did. I asked him to play So You Think You're in Love. I was straightforward. I said, So You Think You're in Love, Wednesday night. But then lots of other people were like, well, I'd love to hear this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not even coming to this show, but I love this song. And he played it to like the third song, I think. And he said
oh,
it was
wow.
one of three happy songs that he's ever written in his life. Because it is a little bit uncharacteristic.
Yeah.
And as we'll talk about in a minute, I was a little disappointed because it was an acoustic show. And that one kind of requires the full-on electric band treatment. But it was still cool. I was like, yeah, that's me. But actually, other people requested it too. So who knows? I want to think I was the first.
Yeah.
It's a pop gem, though.
It is.
It really is a very
yeah.
well-written song. Yeah. Very catchy and just, you know, expertly written.
Mm-hmm.
And did he credit you when he played the song? Did he say like this goes out to Dan Gursky from
no,
Washington D.C.?
He did not credit anybody on the request, and some of them were quite specific and heartfelt. He did say this is a request a number of times, and then if you check sort of the social media feed versus the playlist, you could see a lot of overlap. But
mm-hmm.
I sort of thought that was making it a little bit too personal. Although the man is very personable.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I went to use the restroom at the break, and he was on his phone. He'd changed shirts. He wears these crazy flowered shirts, so he had to change from one flowered shirt to the next flowered shirt. And he was on the phone, or I could have just walked right in and said, hey, thanks for playing my request, or whatever. But he was, you know, he was tweeting, and I think he actually was tweeting before the show, maybe at intermission, maybe after the show. Mm, he's very, very active on social media.
Yeah, he is. That's cool. All right.
Well, why don't we hear So You Think You're in Love go to a break, and then we're going to talk with Dan a little bit more about this show and his thoughts.
The weird
on it.
Part, yeah. Right?
We'll get to the
weird
part.
We haven't got to the weird part yet?
No.
Not really, no.
No, okay. I want to hear the weird part. So and this is also one of those songs that I can't hear enough. So You Think You're in Love. Patrick, one of my favorite things about listening to Rock in the Suburbs myself is when I hear the music at the top of every show.
I can't imagine the show without it, Jim. It's just like an amazing rock and roll riff, and I play air drums every single time.
And I play air guitar. All we need is a bassist, and we would have a full air band. But we know the guys in the real band.
Yeah, we do.
It's called Quart Jar. They're out of Knoxville, Tennessee. They provide us with that awesome music, and what we would encourage our listeners to do is check out some of their other music, too.
Yeah.
You can go to quartjar42.com, and you can find all their albums, including their latest one, which is called Squatch, An Odyssey in Space and Time.
Basically, you know, just a simple kind of normal rock and roll album about traveling across the universe and listening to, like, the Universal Record Station and just basically trying to get out of Earth before Earth explodes, because Jimi Hendrix really is Randall Brown and Quart Jar really is the Jimi Hendrix experience. But, you know, that's just my theory.
Whoa, you're kind of blowing my mind here. Okay, I'm back. And you can find Quart Jar also on Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, all kinds of places like that. So you should check them out on this cosmic trip through life. Okay, and we're back.
We're back. You're diving into the Goza.
I'm going to open my Old Pro, a dash of salt, a touch of tart. Here we go.
All right.
I'm not even sure they put any hops in this. It's totally other flavors. There's no bitterness other than the salt, which is a different family of flavor.
I think it's like a German heritage of some
It's a German wheat beer, actually.
Interesting.
This is really different.
Different, right?
Don't be shy about spitting it out if you hate it.
Just don't do it on the microphones if you don't mind.
Summary, though. I think you need a few drinks and let it settle in.
Get six or eight of those in you, Jim, and it'll start to taste pretty good.
Yeah. It reminds me, there is such a thing, celery soda. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't think I do.
Haven't tried it. I've seen it.
So as you work your way through that, I want to say a couple things. One, Dan was kind enough to muse a little further on this whole Hitchcock social media phenomenon and his thoughts on a piece for suburbspod.com.
Yes, we can't forget that.
Called Can You Tweet Me a Song? So you'll find that there on the website under the Musings category. We thank you for that, Dan.
Right.
And, in your piece,
the question you pose, I guess, is I wanted to ask you about. I wonder how different the shows would have been without the requests you wrote at one point. And what was your, after seeing the shows and thinking about it and writing a little bit, what's your takeaway on that?
Supposedly to support his newest album.
Mm-hmm.
And as I point out in this piece, as far as I know, he played one song from it. He didn't even mention the album. He was selling it in the back and a few people bought him, but it was just a Robin Hitchcock playing what people wanted him to play show.
Interesting, right?
Which was kind of cool. And by the way, speaking of interesting fans, there was that he attracts an interesting crowd for sure. Yeah. There was a lot of solo hardcore fans, just like super friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, the second you sat down, they were just striking up a conversation about how many times they'd seen him and what they wanted to see. And not a Washington suburban type crowd necessarily.
Very interesting. Yeah. He lived in D.C. and Georgetown for a while, I believe, at one point.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So just to get back to the question, I would venture to say that probably he played more requests, maybe more of his, not that he has any hits or anything, but particularly Balloon Man, which I mentioned in the piece.
Yeah,
Which could be a whole discussion, a whole episode discussing Balloon Man and whether I thought he hated playing that, but he actually did play it the second.
That's really interesting.
The second night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hard to say, but it was a satisfying show.
Let me just mention, I should do my job here to promote our little enterprise. So Dan, thank you very much for writing the piece for our website, suburbspod.com. And you're going to find more and more contributors to that website, Dan being one of them. Mm-hmm. And we have several others lined up who want to contribute stuff. So it's a good place to go, not only to listen to the show, but also, you know, see different people's takes on music and interesting things that they have to say. So thanks again, Dan, for being one of our new contributors to the website.
I'm glad you did it. And I guess the only, before we get to the weird part of it, Dan, the only thing I wanted to ask is, did he go back and play any soft boy stuff? Was that fair game, or is it mostly stuff he'd done with the Egyptians and solo stuff?
Not in the first night. The second night, I think he might have played I Want to Destroy You, maybe one or two pieces. I mean, I know a lot of his pieces, but not everything, so...
Because, you know, you can go back to some of those songs, like I Want to Destroy You and, you know, some of the soft boy songs, which are pretty well known. Obviously, one of my favorite sort of, like, I think that's a real influential band that a lot of people forget about.
Yeah. I agree.
Kimberly Rue was also in that band, went on to be in, like, Katrina and the Waves and a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, quick aside, I mean, he played a bunch of covers. He played two Bob Dylans. And then two at the end, and I wanted to, I promised I would quiz you guys about what these two pieces have in common. He ended with Riverman by Nick Drake.
Okay.
Gonna see the Riverman. Gonna tell him all I can about the plan.
And Crystal Ship by The Doors.
Hmm.
The crystal ship is being filled. A thousand girls, a thousand thrills, a million ways to spend your time. When we get back, I'll travel blind.
So any guesses as to what those two pieces have in common?
Wow. They both have to do with water.
That's... Think of lead singers. So let's make it Jim Morrison and
They both died, right?
That's half of it.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And they both were 27 when they died.
Exactly.
Okay.
Very good. That's impressive.
Thank you. That is sort of the magic number for
it
musician
kind of
deaths.
It is, yeah. 27,
Kurt
right?
Cobain
Hendrix,
and
Joplin.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
The Crystal Ships was great.
That's such an interesting cover.
Perfect piece for him.
That's very cool. You know, as a solo artist, you're talking about the deep catalog of material Robin Hitchcock has to work with. By my count here, he has 21 studio albums, starting in... His debut was as a solo artist, 1981.
Wow.
So 21 That's studio amazing. Albums. That's not counting some live albums, some compilations, and so on. So he's been at this a long time, and done some really solid work.
I do have to say, though, he's one of the people that probably has more songs that probably I don't need to listen to than almost any artist that are just a little too clever you know, just a little bit. But I admire the lyrics and all that, but every once in a while it just doesn't quite hit the spot for me anyway.
He can get a little precious at times.
That's all right. I'll give him that.
Yeah, absolutely. So things got weird.
Well, not well, this is the strange part. Okay. So it's the combination of the social media and the small venue. So, and particularly on Facebook. So, you know, I tend to be a bit of a curious person. So I saw what people had requested, and then you can click on their profiles and see where they're from and what they look like. So I identified a couple of interesting requests, which you can read about on the blog piece. And noticed that one guy was sitting behind me and one woman was sitting a couple rows ahead of me. Unfortunately, the woman, and he played both of their requests. The woman actually had left by the time he played her request.
No.
So maybe he should have said, hey, who requested and where are you sitting?
Right. That's interesting.
But there's certainly a stalkerish element that goes along with that, too, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't share a whole lot when you do these things might be the lesson. But some people can't help it.
Well, it's very interesting, right?
So you went to the first night, but then you were able to sort of follow what happened the second night. What, basically from like set list posted online and that kind of thing?
And our friend Kevin Goff, who we did some shows with earlier, he went the second night and he actually posted it on my Facebook page.
Oh, beautiful.
I believe. And Kevin requested three songs. And Robin actually ended up playing two of them.
Wow. Kevin got a little greedy.
Both from the new album. So he did play more from the new album the second night it appears. And so, yeah, I was sort of thinking if I was the musician, I would just take the single requests and say, you know, give me one song. I'll play that. You try to push your luck. I'm not going to play any of them. Sort of like, you know, Tommy Stinson might have done.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Right.
Yep.
Have you seen Robin, Jim?
I have not.
Oh, interesting.
Have you?
Okay, yeah, I've seen him a bunch of times. I saw him at the Birchmere about three or four times, even at the old place once. And so I've always enjoyed him, and, you know, he's a lot of fun live. And I don't know how much he talked between songs, but he's a great storyteller of just, like, anecdotes are really good. Him and, like, Billy Bragg are up there for two of the best people to just talk between songs.
Yeah, and I would say I saw him, in, as I mentioned in the piece, I saw him in the late 80s originally, right after the... Globe of Frogs album came out. But he is a bit obsessed with aging and time, at least in the current incarnation. So he definitely plays up the old man thing. And I can't remember what it was like to be young and I'm a grumpy old man. And a lot of his songs are about time. So it was kind of entertaining, but he's very well preserved.
Yeah.
So that was kind of entertaining.
He'd be perfect for this show.
He would
right?
be. Yeah. We're going to have to see if we can track Robin down and talk to him sometime. That'd be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
This is great.
Thanks for letting me vent and write both.
You want to stick around on the deck for a while?
Sure.
It's
a really lovely day here.
It really is.
So.
I think on tomorrow's show, we're going to play a game.
Oh, that'd
right?
be fun. Yeah.
Is that right?
I think
you devise some kind of game?
I did. Yeah. And if you guys are dumb enough to go along with it, let's give it a try. A
couple more beers, we're good.
And it's not driving and crying, by the way. That's another game.
We're going to play that on Friday.
Yeah.
All right. So you definitely want to hear this tomorrow. We're going to see how this goes. This could be great or it could be a fantastic train wreck.
That's
right.
Could be a train wreck.
All right, and the way you do that is you listen to the show on your phone or whatever device with some frequency.
Yeah, you really only need some sort of audio output to listen to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And how often would you say
I would say
listen?
Every day.
Every day you should listen. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Stitcher, all those places. You can also, as we mentioned, find our website, suburbspod.com.
Yep.
It's not just show notes. There are also writings
anymore.
From people like Dan Gursky. Mm-hmm. You want to check that out.
Yep.
You can also email us, rock@suburbspod.com, and you can call our suburban party line. Leave a message. We'll put your voice on the show.
Should be wonderful.
You can also make requests there,
yes,
right?
Yes, you can.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
There or on our social
That's right.
media.
Tweet us a request.
So the party line is 612-440-1984. And the social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is @SuburbsPod.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Dan Gursky.
And Dan, what are we going to hear as we play out
Mad Shelley's Letterbox from the new album, which I think is the best piece. Definitely listen to this, his latest album. It's good stuff.
It's self-titled. It's just called Robin Hitchcock.
Yep.
All right. Thanks. All right. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Time is written.
Squeegeed off the back of a German day laborer toiling in a coriander processing plant.